think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 272 of Low Limit Football on this 17th of February, 2020. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have separation in the race in Italy after Juve beat Brescia at home while Inter drop a massive result to Lazio in Rome. Madrid draw against Celta Vigo, allowing Barca to creep within 2 points of the top with El Clasico just 2 weeks away. In Germany, Bayern, Leipzig, Dortmund, and Mönchengladbach all win on the weekend. Only 4 points still separate the top four teams, and Mönchengladbach do have a game in hand. And tonight, we are joined by five different soccer journalists to help preview the return of the Champions League round of 16, but not before. We are joined by ex-Barca, ex-Real Madrid, ex-River Plate, and ex-Benfica star, the rabbit himself, Javier Saviola, who will join us in just a little bit. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How are you, my friend?
Good, Joe. Good. The rabbit? Come on. Say El Conejo. You've already been brushing on your Spanish 2 weeks in a row. You're calling the rabbit?
I it was on the fly, man. It was on the fly. What are you going to do? It's trying to keep up here, you know? It's hard work.
I mean, when we get two big guests like this, I mean, man, come on. We got to – let's try to improve our Spanish even more, even for both of us. Let's call him El Conejo.
El Conejo is fine, and my Spanish is getting better, and I'll have you know that I'm brushing up on my Spanish because I'll be on vacation in a month. So I will be more than ready to go, trust me. So what did you think of the week that was, my friend? It's been a little crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's always been a little bit crazy. I mean, there's always something. When you think a week has been so boring and then we go into a show, it's like, all right, what are we going to talk about? Because I forgot what our original OT was, but it was like, you know, we couldn't find anything. And this usually happens a couple of times where there's like almost nothing to have, only nothing to talk about because there's nothing big that has been going on. And boom, we get this news out of Friday of a little team getting banned to play, to not play in Europe. I mean, that's huge.
And we're really lucky. Obviously, you're referring to Manchester City. And just as a little preview to next week's show, we're going to have Simon Bajkowski from the Manchester Evening News come and join us to discuss it a little more. Because obviously, as the dust settles a little bit, because there's still moving parts. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll get the full story from him definitely come up next week. But our original opening thoughts topic was Jurgen Klinsmann, where Klinsmann's basically, you know, he leaves Hertha Berlin after 74 days in charge as the manager, and he quits after they spent 80 million euro in the transfer window in this particular winter window, including Christoph Piontek, who they brought in from AC Milan. He up and leaves, and the front office, this is poetic justice. The front office at Hertha Berlin goes, you know what? That's not good enough. We're actually removing you from the board, and you're done. You're never welcome back here in Berlin, which is phenomenal. Does Rob, you know, and obviously we're not going to go dive deeper into it, but I want to ask you, does he get a big job anywhere at all for the rest of his career?
I'm pretty sure he will. I mean, you don't have the credentials of coaching two national teams, Bayern Munich, and also have the the experience that he had as a player to not get a job whatsoever. I mean, certainly there has to be a lot of more behind the scenes issues than what we know of, but I'm sure someone of Klinsmann's CV, so resume, is able to get some sort of job in some place in the world. He's still young. He's only, I think, 55, not mistaken. So he still has a lot of time on his to his advantage.
I think you're right. I think he can get another quote unquote big job, but it's not going to come immediately. I think he's going to have to take one of those middling jobs and do something not necessarily spectacular, but better the team that he takes over. I think that's what it's going to take initially. And then maybe he gets another crack at a bigger squad, but it's going to take time. It's going to have to. There's going to have to be some repair here, I think, in terms of his image. So, the other quick topic that we wanted to talk to, this is obviously not opening thoughts at all, and that was the news that broke just yesterday. And you and I have been pretty close to this. You know, we've always thought racism was really limited in Italy. We've seen a little bit of it come up in France. We've seen it come up in England, Spain, but never Portugal. And we had the mess that happened this weekend with Musa Marega, the Porto striker, who was basically the subject of racist chants against I'm losing the name of the team that they were playing against.
Victoria,
that's right.
Victoria Guimarães. Yeah, that's right.
And basically to the point where he walked off the pitch. Which finally we've seen that happen. I mean, we saw Balotelli kind of go that way for Brescia probably about a month and a half ago, right, Rob? Amazing scenes. And he had a press conference an interview today where he basically said he could not go on anymore. That it started out at the beginning of warmups, as just a few chants here and there. And by the time the match started, it was pretty much the stadium, that was giving him racist chants, monkey chants, the usual and customary. Now, the thing that I found just reading up on this a little bit more is there are laws on the books in Portugal. For people like this that could actually go to prison, they don't tolerate racism in Portugal, and it's laws on the books. So I really feel like, it's unfortunate that it happened to this man, but I'm glad it happened where it did, because I think that this is finally the place where FIFA and UEFA and all of these other entities can have to step in and go, this is the example, because Portuguese law is going to set the example on this one. You've seen the president of the country. You've seen the president of the association. You've seen many, many, many people come out already in 24 hours and support this man. And I think this is the precedent that finally needed to be set for somebody to open their damn eyes and make a change in their own league, whether it's Italy or England or Germany or Spain, it doesn't matter. It's Portugal that's going to set the example, I think, for the rest of the nation. What did you think about that?
Well, I think we don't want to make too many differences between how, federations are run. There really isn't a set way of how, the specific FAs run. But you would think that with the common courtesy, you have to crack down accordingly to these incidents that unfortunately still happen today in 2020. But I think... I think a lot of the usual debate, of course, is being made about, his teammates trying to calm him down, you would say, of him not trying to leave, you're only making them win. It's like, no, I mean, if he feels in his right mind that he cannot take it, then he has every right to just go and leave, because, who suffers in the end are the fans that are paying to go watch this team. And then for that something to happen is just what they deserved in the end. And I think what's also very sad in a way is that there was nothing from the referee. The referee didn't even do anything.
Gave him a yellow card. I think he gave him a yellow
card. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. He gave him the yellow card, which I thought was absolutely foolish of them to do that.
Yeah, that's going to come back to haunt him, I think, because like I said, this is the place where if it was going to happen, it will happen with some direct effect, and we'll have to see. I mean, obviously we're gonna get more as this comes out. This is really a breaking story in the last 24 hours, so this is pretty tight stuff. But we'll definitely get more of this, and if there's anything else that comes up, we'll definitely bring it to you in next week's show. So, Rob, before we get to opening thoughts, I want to give you trivia. It's my honor. So the Sir Bob trivia question tonight comes from Sir Bob. Believe it or not, he sent this over to me the other day, and I actually got it right. So I think this one should be an easy one. and I'm going to read it directly from him. It's one of those player relations ones. Okay. You know what I mean? Okay. So yes. This person was a teammate of Martin Petrov, Sergio Aguero, Frank Lampard, Nigel de Jong, and David Silva, but never played for Manchester City. Who is he?
One more time.
This person was a teammate of Martin Petrov, Sergio Aguero, Frank Lampard, Nigel de Jong, and David Silva, but never played for Manchester City. Who is he?
Was a teammate of all those players, but never played for Man City. Ooh, that's a good one.
And I don't know where this person played with every single one of these. I've got a couple, and I figured most of them out, but I got it right. So, you know, this one should be an easy one for you, and we'll get to you the answer at the end of the show. All right. Great. Opening thoughts topic tonight, and we kind of alluded to it earlier. Manchester City on Friday was handed a 2-year ban from the Champions League and also a major fine for its shortcomings in financial fair play and the financial fair play rules set down by UEFA. This is actually, Rob, you know, and I'm going to dive into it a little bit. This is a result after, you know, there's been a massive investigation. PSG was subject to this investigation as well, but PSG did not, I guess for lack of a better term, thumb their nose at UEFA. And this is something that Manchester City did once previously in 2014, which they were subsequently fined for. The 2-year ban, I think a lot of people are seeing as a massive punishment. They're seeing it as a excessive punishment. But at the same time, when this is a second offense from a team for breaking financial fair play rules, you think about this too. They're like, well, how come you know this has happened to them, but it hasn't happened to PSG? When was the last time Manchester City sold a major player? I think is the question everyone's asking. They haven't. They've always pumped the money in, bought the players. Despite PSG buying Neymar for $220 million and buying Mbappe for I want to say it was $150 million, they've had players that they've sold off as well. Where here at Manchester City, it hasn't happened. So I want your thoughts on the punishment. And again, we're not going to dive too deep into this because our guest next week is going to be at the heart of all this and give us much better information and much clearer information. But let's start with the punishment handed down by UEFA, Rob. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think in the end, it kind of is a bit groundbreaking. I think we've never seen such a big team get such a big punishment. Obviously, we did see AC Milan suffer a similar ban, but obviously got reincited. About a year later, for only 1 year. I think originally it was 2 years as well, and it got decreased. I think for this sense, it probably will be the same thing for Manchester City. I mean, I don't know how much power they actually have in UEFA and you know, going to the Court of Arbitration of Sport. Mm-hmm. It really is going to be an interesting case of how, you know, this gets appealed. I mean, I think it will get appealed, but do they really go scot-free? I don't know. I doubt it. I think there has to be some sort of repercussions to be made to such a team like this. I mean, I think more than anything, this really is going to be an interesting season for City because, you know, now not for nothing, they're only mattering for one title. And I think they've always mattered for one title over the last few years. I mean, yeah, you want to win the Premier League and all the domestic titles you want, but it's the Champions League, man. That's the one that they want to win. Right. But win or lose, you're going to see a lot of players leave this team because if this ban, and especially a lot of these big young players, especially that want to play in Europe, that like have the ambitions to join Manchester City because of playing in the Champions League, yeah. You think they want to stay? And I think I'll pose that same question to Pep Guardiola. You think he wants to go a single season of not being in the Champions League? No, absolutely not. And that's where all the rumors come in. Yeah, we've heard rumors of him meeting with Juve, and you know, even I'll even jump to you in that case, Joe, because why on earth would they go and talk to Guardiola when they just got Sarri a year later?
Well, you know,
that's just weird.
Well, right now there are a lot of folks in Turin that are not exactly happy with the way the team has progressed under Sarri. So,
right, but listen, hypothetically speaking, they're still in contention to win all three titles. If I'm not mistaken,
that's
correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay, so if they do end up getting a treble, which you know UA have never done in the history in their history, the only team to have done it was Inter. Mm-hmm. If you're going to get a treble when the Champions League for the first time in, I think now, 25 years or something along those lines. Right. You know, when Serie A for a ninth straight year, you win the Coppa Italia, why on earth would you go sack the man? I mean, there's no need for it.
And I agree with you. And I think that if those things do happen, I don't think Sarri goes. But, you know, it was curious that the rumors for Guardiola interviewing with Juve actually came out earlier last week, Rob, if you remember. It was like Tuesday or Wednesday.
That's right.
When that started to hit the fan. And it was just curious that those rumors started to fly about Guardiola interviewing in Turin. We knew about the upheaval or the concerns with Maurizio Sarri at Juve, you know, then as well, the same week. But I don't think any of us saw this ban coming on Friday, which then it's almost like it's, you know, you talk about cart before the horse. The cart before the horse would be Guardiola interviewing. Maybe he knew that this was coming, that it was going to be this heavy. And maybe knowing that, I mean, Juve have been in play for him for a while now. Maybe this was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, saying, listen, it's going to be 2 years. At worst case scenario, it's going to be 2 years. I don't think City get away without a ban. Do you know what I mean? So I think for me, what's going to happen when they go to court arbitration for sport, this is going to either be 2 years or 1 year. It will not be 0 years. Okay, do not expect Manchester City to be in the Champions League next year. I just don't see it, because they're going to make an example of Manchester City on this one. The rules of financial fair play by everybody, by Real Madrid, by AC Milan, by Juventus, by PSG, those rules have been skirted over and over and over again. And I think finally UEFA is like, we need to make an example of it. So I think this is where that line in the sand is going to be drawn. It's going to be drawn on Manchester. And I think, I feel like Guardiola maybe knew that or had some kind of knowledge of that, and thus maybe is pushing the issue with Juve. Could be. I'm interested in the players that could potentially leave Manchester City without Champions League play. And I think that's one I'm going to save for Simon next week a little bit, because I think he'll have a better finger on the pulse of that. But ultimately, Rob, I mean, David Silva was already on his way out, right? I mean, the talk is pretty much this is his last season at Manchester City, so you would expect him to be gone. But my concerns are more like Gabriel Jesus, okay? Sergio Aguero, which to me is an interesting one, because Sergio Aguero is starting to get up in age. I wonder if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, Rob, but he's about 30 years old, if I remember.
Yeah, so, just about that, 32.
Okay, so obviously up there in age, certainly on the backside of a striker's career. Gabriel Jesus, like I mentioned before, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, is another interesting one to me.
Whose stock is just as high
as anybody
before.
Mm-hmm. So now to make reparations, do they sell Kevin De Bruyne? Does Kevin De Bruyne walk in and say, listen, we're not going to Champions League, I'm not playing. So these are the players that concern me, because these are I think Raheem Sterling stays. I don't think there's going to be anything there, but I feel like, you know, the Leroy Sané, I think Leroy Sané is all but gone. Okay. I know he's been injured, but I think he's all but gone. David Silva's all but gone. De Bruyne is an interesting one. Gabriel Jesus is an interesting one. Sergio Aguero is an interesting one. Those are the players. Even Rob, to an extent, Ederson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's another young goalkeeper, Brazilian. He's competing with Alisson for a time on the national team. He's not going to want to be outside of Champions League play. He's going to want to shine on the biggest stage at his club. So Ederson's another guy that is like, is he staying? Is he going? I mean, Chelsea's going to be in the Champions League now, almost guaranteed. Now, he could almost go to Sheffield, because that's the talk right now. Sheffield is in position to go to the Champions League, because now that spot will fall to fifth place. So these are going to be the players that I think are going to interest me, Rob, when all is said and done. Do they go? Do they stay? How long do they stay? There's also the question of point deduction right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this one's still a little more ambiguous, this part of it, because this is still pretty fresh. But there's talk that the EPL could deduct points from Manchester City, almost making this, Rob, like a Calciopoli-Juventus thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine City being dropped to the Championship? I mean, I know it's insane to say that. And again, I don't think that's going to happen. But my God. This is a team that everyone was talking about in August and September and even October as the potential Champions League winners. And here they are going to the Championship. Okay. Think about that for a minute. It would be insane. There's a lot of moving parts in this one. And again, we're going to get Simon in here next week. We're going to have him on. We're going to talk about it. I think, you know, and he'll definitely enlighten us, to say the least. So let's table that talk. And let's get to our guest interview, because, I mean, another massive guest. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Risto Stoichkov joined us, a massive honor. this player now, you know, talk about, you know, some of the big names. And it's a question that I asked him, too, when we did the interview. You know, the weight of Diego Maradona on somebody's shoulders. This is the question you get that Lionel Messi gets, right? He was one of the originals. He was one of the original guys to get that weight on his shoulders. So it's going to be, you know, it was interesting to talk to him. You know, his play in both El Clasico and the Super Clasico, you know, River Plate Boca Juniors and then Real Madrid Barcelona. He's played on both sides of El Clasico, which is another thing very few have done. So, you know, just some great, great insight into his career as well. So without any further ado, Rob, El Conejo himself, Javier Saviola.
Good evening, Javier, and welcome to the show. It's an honor to be speaking with you tonight. Buenas noches, Javier, y bienvenido al show. Es un honor hablar contigo esta noche.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Buenas noches. También es un placer enorme poder estar con ustedes y charlar un rato también.
Gracias. You are only one of a handful of players to have played both in El Clásico and the Super Clásico, two of the biggest rivalry matches in all of sport. Tell us about your favorite experience in both matches, and also tell us what it was like to play for both Barcelona and Real Madrid in that particular matchup. Eres solo uno de los pocos jugadores que han jugado tanto en El Clásico como en el Super Clásico, dos de los partidos de rivalidad más grandes en todo el deporte. Cuéntanos sobre tu experiencia favorita y ambas partidos, y también cuéntanos cómo fue jugar tanto para el Barcelona como para el Real Madrid en este partido en particular.
Sí, bueno, son clásicos muy importantes, de los más importantes del mundo, y para mí fue un privilegio poder haber estado en este clásico con tan buenos jugadores, con tanta calidad dentro del campo de juego, y después lo que significa jugar un Barça-Madrid, que mundialmente lo ve muchísima gente y que el mundo del fútbol es como que se paraliza para ver este partido. Así que para mí fue un verdadero honor y, bueno, tengo grandísimos recuerdos de los clásicos que he vivido.
They're both two important rivalries, probably the two most important and in the world. For me, it was a privilege to have been played in El Clásico with so many great players and great quality in Argentina, and then playing in El Clásico, which is viewed by a much more global audience, and basically the world stops when it comes to watching this game. For me, I have wonderful memories to have played in El Clásico as well. Javier, I wanted to lead on to that experience of playing for many big clubs where you had so many great teammates, not just for club and for country as well. If you had to pick one player that you think was the best teammate that you had during your time in El Clásico, who was it? And secondly, during your time at Barcelona, you had the honor of playing alongside a very young Lionel Messi for club and, of course, for country. What are some of your memories of a teenage Messi, and did you expect him to take off as big as he did almost 15 years ago? Javier, quería que vos hablas más sobre esa experiencia a jugar por tantos gran clubes donde tenía varios socios en el campo, no solamente por club, pero para país también. Si vos tenías que elegir un jugador que vos pensás que fuiste el mejor socio en el campo, ¿quién fue? Y también, hablando de tu tiempo en Barcelona, tuviste el honor de jugar con un muy joven Lionel Messi ahí para Barcelona y también para la Selección Nacional de Argentina. ¿Qué fue uno de tus memorias de ese joven Lionel Messi? ¿Y vos pensabas que iba a ser ese gran jugador que es ahora casi 15 años después?
Bueno, sí, uno no. A mí, cuando llegué a Barcelona, me habían comentado que había un jugador que era muy joven todavía, pero que teníamos que ir a verlo, porque era un jugador que seguramente iba a ser un grandísimo jugador de fútbol, ¿no? Pero nunca nos imaginamos de que ese jugador, cuando lo fuimos a ver, era Messi, y bueno, se iba a transformar después en uno de los mejores jugadores de la historia. Para mí, bueno, fue grandioso poder haber compartido un mundial con él, porque yo jugué en el 2006 en Alemania, jugamos juntos, y bueno, fue, la verdad que fue un verdadero honor, ¿no?, jugar y compartir un vestuario con Lionel. Así que bueno, es eso, ¿no?, de hoy sentirme muy feliz, ¿no?, de poder haber compartido una cancha, de poder conocerlo, de poder tener también una amistad con él. Así que bueno, no tengo dudas que Lionel seguramente nos seguirá regalando momentos grandiosos como lo viene haciendo hasta ahora.
you know, for me, they told me that there was a player that we had to see that was, going to be a really great player, but we had never expected him to be that kind of player like Messi is now. And for me to have played in the World Cup with him together in 2006 and to have been able to share, a training camp with him and to have done that, for me, it makes me very happy and it makes me very proud to have seen him rise to become the player that he is today. Javier, you had the honor of being part of the first Argentina team to win Olympic gold back in 2004 in Athens. How big of an honor is that, looking back almost more than 15 years later? Tuviste el honor de ser parte del primer equipo argentino en ganar el oro olímpico ahí para la selección de fútbol. ¿Qué fue ese honor y la sensación ganándose más de 16 años después?
Sí, para mí fue una de las cosas más importantes que me pasaron en mi carrera, porque ganar el Mundial en Argentina, siendo tan jóvenes, y después tener la posibilidad de salir goleador y mejor jugador del Mundial, la verdad que fue algo impresionante, algo que no me voy a olvidar jamás. Y bueno, sí que tengo el recuerdo de haber sido una de las cosas más importantes que me han pasado en mi carrera.
For me, it was a great honor, as well as to become the top goal scorer as well. Looking back, it really has been a great honor for me to be a part of that team, and definitely it's probably one of the most important titles in the history of my career. Ahora hablando de lo que talking about the situations of both your two clubs in Barcelona and River Plate, how do you see them looking forward into the rest of the year? Quería preguntar sobre cómo ves ahora al Barcelona y al River Plate, los dos equipos que tienen corazón en este año, en los dos torneos que están.
El Barça ahora mismo lo veo un poquito complicado por el tema de que Luis Suárez se ha lesionado. Realmente es un jugador muy importante para el funcionamiento del equipo del Barça. Entonces creo que lo está haciendo a faltar un poco, ¿no? De un delantero centro como él. Pero bueno, el Barça ahora mismo está segundo, ¿no? Está por detrás del Real Madrid, está muy cerca en la Liga Española. Lamentablemente ha quedado fuera de la Copa del Rey. Pero bueno, no tengo dudas que llegará con el Real Madrid hasta las últimas instancias, cabeza a cabeza, ¿no? Entre los dos, para ver quién es el campeón de la Liga Española. Y River lo veo muy bien porque está primero, falta muy poco para terminar el campeonato argentino, y bueno, en los últimos años viene demostrando un poderío enorme que lo viene haciendo muy bien Gallardo, y que sin dudas va a pelear el campeonato e intentar estos últimos cuatro partidos de ganarlos para poder ser campeón en la Liga Argentina.
I see the situation for Barcelona a little bit difficult, especially with the injury that Luis Suarez is in, and it's obviously a big miss for them, given the fact that there's no really a big striker in the presence, but they're very close in the title. You know, unfortunately, they were bounced out of the Copa del Rey, but still, I have no doubt that this team will match up with Real Madrid, you know, even though they are second at the moment, head-to-head up until the end of the match, end of the season, to see who will become champion. And I see River Plate as a good team. You know, they're only a few games away from winning the league as well. You know, I trust a great manager in what is Marcelo Gallardo, and I have no doubt as well that they can do very well as well in the league as well. And my last question as well. Finally, Javier, how is life in Andorra, and what have you been up to coaching there, being with your family and being an ambassador for Barcelona? ¿Cómo es la vida ahí en Andorra, siendo un técnico ahora? Creo que juegas futsal también, estando con tu familia y siendo un embajador para Barcelona.
Sí, 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 la verdad que muy, muy contento viviendo aquí hace 3 años en Andorra y jugando al futsal en un equipo que se llama Fútbol Club en Camp. Y muy bien, muy contento, muy feliz. Tengo dos niños, una niña de 6 años y un niño de 5. Y la verdad que muy contento porque Andorra está muy cerca de Barcelona. Entonces eso me permite también estar ligado con todo el mundo del Barça, ¿no? Con las leyendas del Barça, con las academias que hay en el club también. Así que, bueno, la verdad que muy contento aquí en Andorra.
Life is happy here. I'm very happy. You know, I have two kids. You know, I'm playing in a futsal team as well. And for me to be in Andorra, it's very close to Barcelona, so it allows me to do my work with the Barca legends and with the academy teams. So for me, I'm very content being here in Andorra.
Great. Javier, thank you for your time. I have one more question myself. Tengo una pregunta más. Gracias para tu tiempo. You were one of the first players to bear the weight of the comparisons to Diego Maradona. Describe the pressure you felt with that title, and did it motivate you during your career? Fuiste uno de los primeros jugadores en soportar el peso de las comparaciones con Diego Maradona. Describe la presión que sintió con ese título y te lo motivó durante su carrera.
Sí, bueno, la presión es... En ese momento no tuve ningún tipo de presión porque nunca me comparé con Diego, ¿no? Quizás lo hacía la gente y el periodismo, ¿no? Yo, para nosotros, Diego, hay uno solo. También Messi, hay uno solo, que seguramente todos los que se comparen con él quedarán en el camino, ¿no? Porque estos dos jugadores han sido inigualables y han sido únicos, ¿no? Entonces, creo que yo era consciente de que bueno, esas comparaciones eran más por parte del periodismo, de la gente, de otro tipo de ámbito que no tenía nada que ver con lo que yo creía y lo que yo pensaba, ¿no?
You know, the pressure was I didn't have any because, you know, I felt that I never compared myself with Diego. Perhaps it was from the people and from journalists itself, you know, and for me, there's only been one Diego and there's only been one Messi as well, because those that compare him is... It's not possible because those are players that are untouchable, and I was more conscious in the belief to have not been able to make those comparisons and do what I have to do in playing.
Javier, thank you for joining us on the podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to speak with you tonight. All the best in the future, and we hope to have you back sometime soon. Javier, gracias por unirte a nosotros en el show. Fue un placer hablar contigo esta noche. Todo lo mejor en el futuro, y esperamos tenerte de regreso pronto.
Bueno, muchísimas gracias a ustedes. El placer fue mío y esperemos poder vernos pronto y poder estar ahí con ustedes para compartir una entrevista cara a cara. Un fuerte abrazo para todos.
And thanks again to Javier Saviola for joining us on the show. Rob, let's jump into our previews, our Champions League previews. And to start us off, we are going to go to Get German Football News' editor-in-chief Dan Pinder for his thoughts on the PSG-Dortmund match coming up tomorrow.
For me, Borussia Dortmund against PSG on Tuesday night is, you know, what is one of the games in this round of fixtures. You know, it's so exciting, the amount of attack and talent that is on show with Neymar, Kylian Mbappe. And obviously from a Dortmund viewpoint, you've got Jadon Sancho and Erling Braut Haaland, who arrived at the Bundesliga club from Salzburg in the winter window for a nominal fee of €20 million. You know, obviously that fee in itself is... You know, it's just astonishing, and the return he's got already, I mean, where do you even start with him? He's got a goal every 38 minutes in the Bundesliga this season, you know, 5 games, 8 goals, 1 assist. And there's the question whether he can do it on a big stage, but you know, he's already shown that at Salzburg with 8 Champions League goals in 6 games this season. And for Borussia Dortmund, he's... That play that they've been missing, he's much more than a goal threat now, and he's shown that in such a short time frame at the Bundesliga club. And, you know, it's something they've missed with Mario Götze. You know, obviously he started, but he can't hold the ball up there. And then obviously Paco Alcacer, he's obviously gone back to Spain now. And even with Marco Reus obviously being out of this side at the minute, you know, going forward, they are coping. And for me, this game... And Borussia Dortmund, if they lose, it's going to be through their defence. I mean, you got Lucien Favre, who can't decide on his favourite formation and the place to suit that system at the minute. I mean, I was at the game against Bayer Leverkusen the other weekend, where they lost 4-3. They started that game at 4-2-3-1, and Manuel Akanji at right back, who, you know, you see the team sheet and you see him there, and you think, why the hell is he playing there? You know, he's just not right back at all. And that showed against Bayer Leverkusen. Obviously, Dortmund took the lead twice, but they ended up losing 4-3. And that prompted Favre to change back to a 3-4-3, which, in my opinion, suits Borussia Dortmund much more. I mean, even the arrival of Emre Can in midfield, that helps so much. And he's going to start in double pivot with Axel Witsel. And the duo there, they've already got such a great understanding. And then, you know, going forward, obviously you've got Jadon Sancho, Thorgan Hazard and Haaland, as we touched upon. But, you know, Jadon Sancho is one who can really be a spark for Borussia Dortmund on Tuesday against PSG. You know, Neymar's already said that he's a special player and that he watches him. And averaging a goal every 1.5 Bundesliga games this season is just, you know, someone that young, it's such a great feat. I mean, he's the first teenager to reach 25 league goals. He scored and assisted in 9 Bundesliga games. And he already has 13 assists already this season. So, for me, Borussia Dortmund going forward, you know, they're one of the greatest teams to watch. It's going to be their defence where could cause them problems against the attacking threat of PSG. In defence, have conceded 11 goals in 6 games already in 2020. And for a team with Borussia Dortmund stature, it's diabolical and it's just not good enough for them. Even with Mats Hummels coming in back in the summer, they still lack leadership. But the arrival of Can has been a welcomed addition, and he called for his teammates to be more fierce and, you know, don't be afraid to get stuck in and give away the odd foul in here and there. It's something that they need, and I don't know, it's going to be a close game. And if Borussia Dortmund can counter the threat of the pace of Mbappe and Neymar, then sure, they've got every chance that they can come away with a win on Tuesday.
Now, Rob, before you and I give our thoughts on this particular matchup, we were lucky enough to get two opinions on this one. So for the second preview, let's go to the other side, the PSG side, with Jonathan Johnson from ESPN.
So this is Jonathan Johnson of ESPN FC. Looking forward to Paris Saint-Germain away at Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League round of 16. Shaping up to be a very interesting match. I mean, two very attack-minded sides, two pretty shaky defences, especially when you consider the way that PSG are coming into this match off the back of a surprise 4-4 draw away at Amiens in Ligue 1. Amiens, a team, you know, have not really had that much luck in front of goal this season, find themselves at the wrong end of the table, you know, to go and score. To race into a 3-goal lead in the first half was pretty mind-blowing. Obviously, PSG had rotated a number of their players, but it bodes well if you're of a Dortmund persuasion ahead of the match. So I think this one, considering that Neymar and Mbappe are back in the PSG squad, there's a couple of absentees on the Dortmund side, you know, no Royce, no Brandt. I think this one is, you know, it's still got mouth-watering potential despite a couple of absentees. And over the two legs, it's going to be a question of who outscores the other side by virtue of their defence being slightly stronger. And that that certainly seems to be the way that this this first leg at Westfalenstadion is shaping up to be. Players to watch out for, I mean, the names are obvious, you know, on the Dortmund side, you've got the likes of Haaland in fine form at the moment, Jadon Sancho as well. And then on the PSG side, you've got Neymar, who's coming into the match under massive pressure, considering that he's rarely featured for PSG in the latter stages because of injury since he joined from Barcelona back in 2017. And then you've got Kylian Mbappe as well. And that sort of battle between Haaland and Mbappe, you know, the sort of two young prodigies of world football at this moment in time is perhaps, you know, one of the most interesting battles within this match, you know, seeing which of the two prolific goal scorers will come out on top. But like I said before, you know, defence certainly seems like it's going to have its say in this match as well, or the least leaky of the two defences. And you know, the midfield battle is also going to be very important as well. Dortmund boosted themselves with the arrival of Emre Can during January, and PSG always go with quite an interesting midfield makeup that quite often includes, you know, the likes of Marquinhos, and then there's obviously Marco Verratti there and Idrissa Gueye as well. So, you know, plenty to look out for in this first leg. You know, and I think it's... it really does boil down to who is going to be the tightest of the two defenses over the two matches. So for me, I think ultimately PSG are going to come out on top over the two legs. I'm expecting a high scoring draw in the first leg, and I'm expecting PSG to be tighter in defense in the return leg at home, and that's how they'll progress in the end.
And thanks to both Dan Pinder and Jonathan Johnson for helping us break down this match. Rob, I'm going to give you my two second thought, and it kind of echoes what both of them said. There's going to be a lot of focus on the Haaland versus Mbappe matchup, two of the young, prolific strikers. There's going to be a lot of focus on Jadon Sancho and what he can do to really drive that offense, as we've seen him do. There's going to be a massive pressure, as Jonathan alluded to, on Neymar, because it's finally, he's got to produce. You know, he comes with such a massive price tag, he's got to actually put up now. And this is a massive challenge, because this particular matchup is screaming goals. So I don't see either of these matchups going under the traditional 2.5 goals a game. I think we're going to see a lot of goals in this one. And it's going to be, like both of them said, which defense is leakiest is going to be the one that is going to lose out on this one. I think it's going to be regardless of what Tuchel and Lucien Favre do. I think really it's going to be on that back line. It's going to be on Idrissa Gueye. It's going to be on Verratti. It's going to be on Emre Can. It's going to be on Axel Witsel. It's going to be on what those portions of these teams do that are really going to dictate which team moves through. What are your thoughts on this match?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's so many storylines that you can go into this type of matchup. But I think obviously, you know, you mentioned goals, and I think that's the one where we really have to be focusing on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have Haaland in wonderful form, Sancho in wonderful form, you know, Neymar prior to his injury was on wonderful form, Mbappe, Icardi, Di Maria. I mean, they're all in great forms. So these teams have great attacks. And I think in the case of going into this type of matchup, the thing that Dortmund really need to do, at least for them being at home, is to keep that at bay as best as they can. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, while they could indeed get an away goal, I mean, if they could concede an away goal, they need to score more. Yeah. They need to – you have to talk about a 3-1, a 4-1, something along those lines, because you don't want to go to the Parc des Princes the following week or the next tie when you're only winning 2-1, because that's a dangerous lead. Because, you know, one goal for PSG over there at in Paris, and that just, like, closes off the tie for them. So they really need to be strong on the attack and really strong in the defense, because they cannot concede goals. And to do that against that tough PSG, that really good attacking PSG side, will be a tough one.
Yeah, for me, ultimately, I think, you know, to give a quick prediction here, I do think PSG move through on this one, only because there's inconsistency that you get with Dortmund from time to time that I don't think they will be able to overcome in a two-legged setup here. So I think PSG moves on, but it's going to be very close and extremely entertaining. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think the PSG side is much more experienced in a way. And I personally feel as if though now they have to shine, they really have to step it up, because you know, that's what they want. They want the Champions League, and they need to continue to find this good form and focus on that 100%. So, yeah, I think I'd favor PSG in this one as well.
No doubt. Let's get to our second preview. That is going to be Atleti and Liverpool, the defending champions. And to get the preview on this one, we are going to go to John O'Sullivan from Anfield Index.
So I'm John O'Sullivan. I'm a freelance sports journalist based in Galway in the west coast of Ireland. And I'm previewing the Atletico Madrid versus Liverpool Champions League last 16 tie, the first leg, which of course will take place in the Wanda Metropolitano Stadium in Madrid, which was where Liverpool won their sixth European crown last summer. So it holds a lot of good memories for me. For this game, I think Atletico Madrid, as a Liverpool fan, were probably the team I least wanted to draw because, you know, as the old adage goes, styles make fights. And I think their style is probably the best suited to neuter Liverpool's attacking game. Although, in truth, Liverpool have gotten far better playing against deep blocks in the last couple of years. It's an element of their game that's really come on. But I think Atletico Madrid can probably take some inspiration and some confidence from the fact that Napoli beat Liverpool in Italy and it drew at Anfield, playing a similar style, a kind of a deep block 4-4-2 shape. And in those games, they really kind of shut down Liverpool as an attacking force. And it goes without saying that's very impressive because of some of the players Liverpool have and the success they've had in recent times. But I think Liverpool are definitely favourites for this tie. Atletico have had a difficult season. They draw quite a lot. They even drew 2-2 last night, I believe. And they had a tough summer last year, losing some very experienced players, especially the defence, like Felipe Luis, Juan Fran and Diego Godin. And it's very hard just to click your fingers and assimilate a lot of new players into a defensive system as maybe unique as the one that Simeone employs. So the likes of Kieran Trippier have come in and, you know, they haven't really picked up the slack that the likes of Juan Fran have left behind. And of course, then they have other signings like João Félix, who haven't really hit the heights predicted for them. But, you know, it was always going to be difficult for them this season to really assimilate so many new players in at once. So as much as I think it'll be a difficult tie, I think Liverpool will come through just because they're so solid with Alisson back in form now after an injury and Van Dijk holding things down and Joe Gomez back in the team as a right side of centre half. I think he's certainly a better option there than Dejan Lovren, and with Joe Matip's injuries, he's really established himself there and deservedly so. So I think it might be very tight. It will be something like 2 or 3-1 on aggregate. And, you know, even though Atletico Madrid can theoretically hurt Liverpool with their very solid defence and they can be very good in the counter-attack at times, I think this is a tie that Liverpool should probably go through in. But I'm probably less confident about facing them than any other team in the competition. And, yeah, I think it'll be maybe something like 3-1 to Liverpool in aggregate and probably a 1-1 draw on the first leg. And then the power of Anfield, where Klopp has never lost a European tie, should bring them through.
And thanks to John O'Sullivan for joining us. Rob, I'm going to go to you quickly before I, you know, when I give my thoughts here. But I think for me, I kind of echo what John said here as well, thinking about this matchup. This is one of those ones that I think is going to be played very tightly. I think seeing a draw in the first leg is not out of the question. But I do think Liverpool move on in the end in this one. I think they will score enough goals. And we've seen them do this. We've seen them win plenty of 1-0s, 2-0s. And I just don't see, you know, we've talked about this before, I don't see Atleti being able to score enough goals. And I think that's the biggest concern with them. I think, you know, a 2-1 aggregate, a 3-1 aggregate in this one, I think is more than likely. And I think it'll go to Liverpool. How about you, sir?
I think, yes, there is a huge, you would say, gulf of class in what Liverpool offers, being the defending champions of them, just wiping the talent and the competition in the Premier League. But you have to remember, now that they go Madrid side like this, head by Simeone, went to 2 Champions League finals. He knows how to manage these ties. Like he's experienced with it. Yes, he hasn't won the Champions League, but he knows how to manage the team itself. So I agree. I think a lot of people are saying that, oh, you know, Liverpool are going to wipe the floor and this is going to be an easy game for them. No, I think it's going to be very tight in the end. Over there in the Wanda, I think it's going to be very, very, very tight. If you know, let's just say, I don't know, Madrid score early on, and then they have to really like defend against that really good attack that that Liverpool has to offer. I'm not saying that's possible, but it wouldn't be unlikely. But having said that, yeah, I agree. I think this Liverpool side is just completely better than probably anyone else in Europe, I would say. And I see them advancing as well to the quarterfinals.
No doubt about it. Let's get to our third preview. And for this one, we were lucky to be joined by Transfer Market's Manuel Veth to preview Leipzig and Tottenham Hotspur.
Hi, Roberto. First of all, thank you for having me on the show. Yeah, I'm previewing Tottenham against Leipzig, or as I said, I was actually in Leipzig yesterday, possibly the biggest away game in Leipzig's very short history. And I think that sums up pretty much what that game means for Leipzig. It's a very big game. It's an important game for the club. It's a game that they feel they can win, especially, you know, with Julian Nagelsmann, one of the most exciting head coaches in Europe, in charge of the club. Them chasing the Bundesliga title at the moment here in Germany. I think they very much feel that they can win the title. And Julian Nagelsmann yesterday was asked about this game and about coaching against Jose Mourinho, and he said that has very little impact on him and the way he's approaching this tie. So I think that sums pretty much up how Leipzig are viewing this tie, and I think that they're very, very ambitious in wanting to win this game. Of course, there's a lot of side noise at the moment about Timo Werner and his future, and I actually spoke to their CEO, Rasenballsport Leipzig's CEO, so that's where the RB comes from. Oliver Minzlaff about this yesterday, and he said that in terms of other clubs approaching Leipzig, there has been no news whatsoever in terms of any club wanting to sign him. That does, of course, not mean that no one wants to sign Timo Werner. But at the same time, he will be very much in the spotlight, you know, with him playing in England for this game against Tottenham. That means that he will be in the spotlight a lot. A lot of the press will be focused on him. And I think that means that he will be very much the player to watch. And he's been a very, very important player for them, even though the last couple of games he's been experienced a little bit of a dry spell. He's, of course, scored 20 goals in his first 20 Bundesliga games this season. Now he was without a goal for a couple of games, didn't score against Bayern in the big title clash last week, and then didn't score yesterday when Red Bull, Rasenballsport Leipzig, sorry, defeated Werder Bremen 3-0. But that game actually gives you a really good indication of how strong of a side they are, because defensively Nagelsmann has readjusted them a little bit, and they have been better as of late and keeping other sides out. If you can keep Bayern Munich out over 90 minutes against Werder Bremen, the relegation side, the game was pretty much over after 60 minutes, and then they went into first gear and just rotated the ball. Nagelsmann making some switches to adjust for the game on during the week against Tottenham. So I think that Leipzig have a very good chance in this game. I think Tottenham are a side with experiencing a lot of problems this year, and Jose Mourinho, of course, is an excellent coach, but I think that over the two ties, I think Leipzig can take this Tottenham side. Well, that's it from me, guys, from Germany. Until next time, cheers.
Thank you again to Manuel for joining us there. I want to echo a couple of things that he said in that interview. First and foremost, I feel like Timo Werner is the most important person or player on the pitch in this particular tie. Mm-hmm. I think he's the one that should have the most eyes on him. I think he's a striker that, I mean, if you haven't been watching Timo Werner, you're missing out, because I think, to be honest with you, there's only about six or seven teams in all of Europe that Timo Werner is not the starting striker for. I think he is that good. And I think that his performance in this particular tie, and especially moving through to the Champions League, and because for me, Rob, I actually feel like Leipzig's going to win this tie. I think it's important for him. I think he sees that pie in the sky, and I think that it's an important stage for him to perform on. So I think you're going to get a massive, massive performance out of Timo Werner. I don't think Jose Mourinho has had enough time with this Tottenham Hotspur side, a good side, by the way, too. I'm not poo-pooing Tottenham's quality. I just feel like to truly accept and to truly be what Mourinho would want you to be takes more than 5 or 6 weeks. And I just don't think he's had enough time there. These are not his pieces. These are not his parts. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get the Tottenham Hotspur that we saw in the Champions League last year. So for me, I feel like this is Leipzig, and I feel like Leipzig moves on in this one. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think what we see of this Leipzig side, this really has to be one of the more tighter ties, that's a good word, ties of this entire Champions League, not just of the whole of this week. I think the entire Champions League. I think we're really seeing two sides that, you know, even though they are very similar in the way that they play, I think you would have to favor Leipzig in this one, because I think with the form that Timo Werner is in at the moment, the way that they're still fighting neck and neck in the Bundesliga, which obviously is a big competitive league in itself, you know, Nagelsmann is probably one of the most, maybe the most exciting young coach, and very young, in the entire world. He really knows how to get the best out of the side. It is, of course, new waters for them, because they have never reached this far in the Champions League, whereas compared to the Spurs, who made it all the way to the final, and Mourinho also winning two Champions League off his on his resume. I agree. I still think that they don't have enough time together for them to get something there, you know. And obviously, you know, you have no Harry Kane, even though there have been the rising form of Heung-min Son, Lucas Moura, Dele Alli, those type of players. But in the end, I think Leipzig in itself will edge this one closely. And I agree. I think all eyes will definitely be on Timo Werner in this one.
No doubt. For our last preview, we turn to someone that I really want to spend more time with eventually. From La Liga Lowdown, Paco Politz, to preview Valencia-Atalanta.
Coming up with a preview of this first leg of the Atalanta versus Valencia round is actually not that easy, because we're talking about two teams who haven't met each other in an official game ever. They did 3 years ago in Valencia's own Trofeo Naranja, which they usually open the season at home with, and Atalanta were able to beat the home side with a 1-2 score in this friendly game. This time, though, things will get much more serious. Plenty of controversy has heated up this fixture beforehand, because Atalanta's president stated after the last 16 draw 2 months ago that facing Valencia was a gift, in the sense that they felt they weren't the stronger team in their pot. This has motivated Valencia in the previous days before this match, but unfortunately for them, Valencia's run in the first weeks of 2020 hasn't been that great. Yes, they beat Barca at Mestalla. Yes, they showed lots of promise this weekend in their 2-2 draw against Atleti at home, but their results have been far from stellar in January, and they got knocked out from Copa del Rey by Granada a few days ago. Valencia right now are 7th in the table, but only 2 points away from Atleti, who are 4th. In Atalanta's case, they have won 3 of their last 4 games in Serie A, including a big turnaround against Roma this weekend. The 2-1 final score allowed their team to face this Champions League round while sitting currently 4th in the standings. Regarding players to watch, I think everybody should definitely pay attention to Valencia's Ferran Torres, leaving aside obvious choices like captain Dani Parejo or strikers Rodrigo Moreno and Maxi Gomez. Ferran really looks like the next big thing in European football. He's only 20, but the bag of tricks of this guy is seemingly limitless. He absolutely destroyed Atleti on the wing last Friday and is easily one of the most informed Spanish players right now, being, by the way, in Luis Enrique's potential list for the upcoming friendlies which Spain will play in March. In Atalanta's case, veteran forward Josip Ilicic will be one of the players to watch, but actually the whole attacking front will be very dangerous for Valencia, as they have scored 63 goals in total, being the best attacking triplet in Serie A to date. Due to the fact that both teams are pretty similar in the way they play in their best nights, accuracy and efficiency will be crucial towards qualifying to the next round. Also, the concentration and consistency of Valencia's defense will be put to the test. Remember, only 2 centre-backs available, Mangala and Mokhtar Diakabi. If Celades is able to get the best out of his team, take advantage of set pieces and punish any mistakes Atalanta make, Valencia stand a big chance of winning this. I believe a low score draw in the first leg, for example a 1-1 score, would be pretty good for Valencia. This way they can solve the round in the second leg at home with the incredible support of their fan base.
Yeah, thanks again to Paco Pulis for joining us to give us that preview. The keys here that I think, for me, Rob, I actually think Atalanta is going to move through on this one. We saw them come back against Roma on the weekend. They're the highest scoring team in the Serie A right now. They seem to score goals at will. They've got a healthy Duvan Zapata. They've got Josef Ilicic, who's playing very, very well. Papu Gomez. Their entire team is healthy. These guys can actually do it. On the flip side, Valencia is going to be missing Ezequiel Garay. So defensively, they're going to be suffering there. Kevin Gamero is doubtful. Denis Cheryshev is also doubtful for this one. So they do have some questions there. Ferran is a wonderful player. But I think ultimately, I feel like this is Atalanta's team. Atalanta needed a break in this tournament. And when they got that, they started to move forward very aggressively. And you saw them go from last place with 3 matches to play to making second and moving through. So I really feel like Atalanta's playing some of the best football you're seeing in Europe right now, and it's going to be Atalanta moving on for me. What are your thoughts?
It's a pity that this Atalanta side, you know, is like, what, 9 points behind Inter? I think with the talent that they have, if they had just won a few more games, they would definitely be in that Serie A title race. But, you know, this team loves to score goals, and then now coming at full force, heading into the game at San Siro against Valencia, yeah, you really have to favor this one. But in a way, I think this still could be a flip of a coin. But, you know, I think in terms of talent and production of what this Atalanta side has to offer, you know, I think they are favorites in this one. I think they, and I agree with you, Joe. I think we're going to go all 4 of the games to predict, and I think Atalanta will indeed qualify to the next round.
Yeah, and this one for me, Rob, is probably the most exciting matchup that no one will talk about, because it doesn't have the, you know what I mean? It doesn't have PSG. It doesn't have the flashiness there. It doesn't have the Juve or the Barcelona or the Liverpool or one of the English sides. So that's why this one will get talked about the least. And for me, this one has potential to be the most exciting of all the matchups in the round of 16.
For sure.
Coming out. So, Rob, you know, with that in mind, let's give you some matches of the week coming up this week, because we've got a full schedule coming up this week, no doubt about it. So on Tuesday, as we've already alluded to, Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, 3 p.m. in the Champions League. Dortmund, PSG, 3 p.m. in the Champions League. On Wednesday, Atalanta Valencia at 3 p.m. and Tottenham Hotspur, RB Leipzig at 3 p.m. as well. On Thursday, we have Eintracht Frankfurt, RB Salzburg, Erling Haaland's old team, at 12:55 in the Europa League, and Getafe Ajax, you know, one of the semifinalists of last year's Champions League, also facing us at 12:55 p.m. Jumping back into the league play on Saturday, we have Chelsea Tottenham kicking us off at 7:30 a.m. Again, these are all Eastern times. Then in the Bundesliga, Schalke RB Leipzig at 12:30 p.m., a matchup of some of the top teams in Germany there. And we move on to Fiorentina AC Milan at 2:45 in the Serie A on Sunday. Rennes and Nimes at 11 a.m., and we're going to close it out with a La Liga matchup that's certainly a tasty one and possibly one of the matches of the week. Atletico Madrid, Villarreal, those two teams that are fighting for Champions League spots, that's going to be at 3 p.m. So, Rob, going back to the trivia question real quick. I'm going to give you the players, and again, this is compliments of Sir Bob, and if you can give me a name. So this person, the player that we're looking for, was a teammate of Martin Petrov, Sergio Aguero, Frank Lampard, Nigel de Jong, and David Silva, but never played at Manchester City. Who is he?
Oof. Yeah, it's tough. I'm trying to think of, like, I think this is a name, but I'm not sure if he played with the first guy. The for some reason, this is the name that's coming up. Is it Lucas Biglia?
It's not.
It's not Lucas Biglia.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You want to know what the giveaways were for me on this one?
What?
Sergio Aguero and David Silva. The fact that they were in there and didn't play for City, I had to think of where those players played that they would have played with this player. And then that's how I got it. Those were the giveaways for me. Lampard, too. Lampard's a great hint on this one.
Lampard.
So where did Frank Lampard play?
Played at Chelsea, mm-hmm. West Ham, Manchester, not counting NYCFC.
Right. So odds are this player played with Frank Lampard. If he didn't play with him at Manchester City, nobody big that played at NYCFC, so it would have to be either Chelsea and West Ham. And Chelsea's where he played the bulk of his career. So for me, it was a player that played with these guys and played with Lampard at Chelsea.
Is it a Spanish player?
It is a Spanish player.
It is a Spanish player.
And that's why David Silva and Sergio Aguero made sense to me. Silva, he would have played with him on the national team. And he would have played with Aguero at Aguero's other club.
Atletico Madrid. It can't be Juan Mata.
It is not Juan Mata.
It's not Juan Mata. Fernando Torres?
Fernando Torres.
That's what I thought. Yep. Yeah, there we go.
That's Martin Petrov, I wasn't sure where he played with him. And Nigel De Jong.
Where did he play with De Jong?
I don't know where he played with De Jong, but Silva, Aguero, and Lampard were like the three that were like boom, boom, boom. So he would have played with Aguero at Atleti. He would have played at Frank Lampard at Chelsea, and he played with David Silva on the national team.
That's a good question. So, that's a really good question.
Fernando Torres is your answer. So without further ado, my friend, Let me punch up the closing music here.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So, for episode 272 of Low Limit Football, thanks again to Javier Saviola, Jonathan Johnson, Paco Pulitz, John O'Sullivan, Manuel Veth, and Dan Pinder for all joining us on the show and helping us really create one of the better shows we've ever had. Next week, we're going to give you the same type of previews with four new guests. We're going to have Simon Bajkowski from the Manchester Evening News to talk about Manchester City and bring you a lot more information. So, for episode 272 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.